Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. It once again I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2642. Tonight we're going to have Sharon Higdon-Jones on, and she is a licensed psychotherapist, and she's been one for over 35 years, and we'll get more into that. Right now I need to read the mission statement, and we'll get on from there. Okay, we have a singleness of purpose at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so from two different ways. Number one is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. Number two is offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. That's prevention, intervention, and recovery. Anyone who knows me knows that I'm very, very heavy into prevention. By the way, I am Carol Levine. I almost always forget to say who I am. And then you figure it out in the course of the show because someone will say, hey, Carol, whatever. But anyway, the point is this. We're on this show to teach people, to help people, to support people with all the things that we've learned over the years. Whether it be through schooling or whether it be through our own lives, you know, our life adventures, and there are bad ones, many of them, and just simply to help people. And I'm really happy to say that we have many things to offer people. You can go to the NASCA website, that's NASCA.org, that's NASCA.org, and you'll see that there's all different kinds of things you can open up. You go down to scroll down to the red lines that go across, as I call them, red lines. And a menu drops, okay? And in those menus, it gives an awful lot of information, all different kinds of paragraphs about this, about rearing children, about sexual abuse, how to speak to your children. I mean, there's just so much information. Under prevention, I love that one there, and highlights is good. There's just all different kinds of things that people can learn from. And, of course, this is April, and April is Child Abuse Awareness Month, and because of the pandemic, it's not quite as easy like it was before to get out there and do presentations and so forth, but that doesn't matter. What you can do is you can hang up some information from NASCA. Like the 10, I think it's 10 signs of child abuse. Some have 17, depending on which one you look at. And that's helpful. You just go into a store, hang it up, ask permission first, okay? And usually food stores are very good for that. They allow you to use their bulletin board. If you go into Walmart, what do you see on the wall? In Walmart, you see about children who are missing. And that's, of course, the missing and exploited children. It's that foundation, and they allow for that. So, you know, that's another way of getting the word out. And April is that month that was designated for Child Abuse Awareness Month. Okay. Now, So anyway, we have Pamela from Louisiana, and she, of course, is a board member. A lot of you know her. And we're going to have a panel here. We have a couple people here anyway. And you can call in at 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. If you want to be on the panel tonight, that would be great. And we also have her husband, Mark. Yeah, he's here too. And he's going to be my trailer. And as people come in and call, I can see who's in the studio, and that's very helpful, you know, to the host, okay? I'm running the show, and you need help with other people with the trailing. So, Sharon, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you. And I hope you can hear me. We've been having some internet and technological problems and phone issues, and I don't know what else going on. So I hope you can. I just had a birthday this weekend, so I'm feeling very good. I'm coming down from a birthday high. So it was just a wonderful, wonderful time where, you know, it's always a reason to connect with people when it's, you know, a special time. And although obviously every Tuesday night and every night of the week, I guess it's a special time for NASCA. We can always connect with people, but connecting is so important, especially during this time. So it was really nice to catch up with friends and family this weekend. And sometimes we can't meet in person, but just to be able to connect felt so good. It felt so good.
No. Oh, boy.
I'm good.
Well, happy birthday to you. I'm not going to ask
you
how old you are. You don't have to tell people.
No.
And that's okay. No.
I don't tell.
I'm starting to say that I'm starting to say that I'm 29. Leave
good
it at
idea.
That.
I think when you have a birthday during a pandemic, you subtract a year for every year. And since this is my second birthday during a pandemic, I'm 2 years younger than when I started.
There you go.
Right?
It might have taken 2 years off our life just worrying about it. I don't know. Oh, my God.
I think you're right.
Oh,
I think you're right.
Yeah, and on it goes, doesn't it? All right, well, listen, does anyone have something that they'd like to speak about? Because this is a good way for people to hear what we're talking about. We're trying to help people. We're trying to teach people what we know and also, too, to support them. You know, there are times when people just need support. During this time, I get many phone calls, and I get them in the daytime, too, now. I used to just get it be the night owl.
Ooh.
Now I get in the daytime. I know. But, you know, so many people are so upset right now because the pandemic just continues to go on and on. I have two very dear friends that came down with the pandemic, and I was in their house when they were positive. I didn't know it. They didn't know it. But by the grace of God, I didn't get it, you know. I don't know. What can I say? And, you know, so it's a frightening time for everyone. And so what happens during this time is those who suffer from PTSD, all right, their PTSD, they go like 10 steps backwards because they're fearful. They're fearful of this. They're fearful of that. They're fearful for the violence that's been happening in the streets. That may, you know, slow down because of the verdict today, which we can't be political. I don't know, although I kind of doubt it. But anyway, the point is this. There's so much in this world that we weren't used to, like when it was Leave It to Beaver time, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Leave it,
you know,
everything was so different during those days. Of course, my kids love to be Leave It to Beaver, and my son, my Goofy's on my love of my life, my son and my daughter, they still watch Leave It to Beaver and that. They have a channel for that. So I think that when they get stressed out, they go to Leave It to Beaver or something, one of the others. So, you know, but do you have something you want to talk about?
No, I'd like to comment on that because obviously I'm not going to disclose my age, but I must say that I did grow up in the time of Leave It to Beaver, and it was a wonderful time because everything was very predictable, right? There were so many rituals, there were so many kind of, you know, rules and regulations regarding behavior. We didn't have access to technology like we do that. We didn't have the internet and so on, so we're not confronted with things that we have to deal with or manage or or respond to in some way. And it was a simpler time. And I think right now we're going through such a time of fear because we're confronted with an unpredictability. We're confronted with things that we have not experienced before. And we don't have the rituals. We don't have the connections. We don't have the regularity that we had, say, a year and a half ago. So we're left to a lot of our own devices. And I'm not talking about, you know, technological devices, but that too. We're dependent oftentimes on the media, on social networking and so on to provide us with information, which is not always correct. And we need to respond. And there are a lot of things that are causing a lot of fear and apprehension and, you know, in people. And I think what we can talk about is how do we deal with that? How do we deal with the unexpected? How do we deal with the unpredictable? How do we know the difference between something we really need to be concerned about and we need to take action about, either internally or externally? And how do we know that it is not a real threat? How do we know that it's not just our perception? Or how do we know that that it is, you know, our old stuff, which is very real, getting activated, and we need to do some internal work? Like, how do we measure that? And I would love to know how you all deal with some of the fear and unknown and apprehension, and because we're all flying by the seat of our pants, aren't we? You know.
Yeah, well, we are. You know, with myself, I don't get triggered easily anymore. I really don't. And my mother used to have a song that she loved, and I only partially loved it because it was too old time for me. But it was the song, Whatever Will Be, Will Be. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. George Day.
And yes. And she used to make me play it on the piano, and she wanted me to sing it because I do a lot of singing and all this other stuff. And she had a pretty good voice, too. So that might be one commonality that we had. I think that was probably the only thing, okay? So, but the point is, you know, back then in those days, even the music was so different. It was calming. Mm. You could understand the words, for God's sake, you know? Today, you know, I listen to some of the music today and I go, what? What'd he say? What'd she say? I don't know what they said, you know what I'm saying? So I don't know what people are doing. I know when I was used to be a runner, I would go out and I would run when I would get terribly upset over something, and that was a way to help relieve stress. And so now I don't run as much as I was in a car accident, my hip did get injured. I have a placard, but I don't really use it unless I really need to, you know. Like in the winter time, you're more achy, all this other stuff. But the point is, my outlet is music. I love to sing, Sharon. I sing from morning. Well, I don't get up in the morning, do I? I sing from when I get up until, you know, when I go to bed, you know. And I don't know what the neighbors think, and I don't care. I did have one guy clap outside one day. I thought, oh, that was good. Okay. He heard me. But, you know, it's what do you do?
Well, the first thing I do, you know, in terms of I don't get as fearful anymore as I used to. I kind of, I learned the difference, I think, between responding and reacting, you know, and reacting is more of an emotional kind of thing, and responding is saying, is this something that, you know, what's really happening right now? Is this something that I need to do to take action? And I think when I was going through a lot of my healing, it felt like I had to take action on everything. You know, every inner movement, every feeling, everything I heard from the outside, every story of abuse I heard. When I was first a therapist, I would get so activated. But I think now I have learned to be a little bit more rational and to say, you know, is there anything that I need to do to take action? Is there anything appropriate I need to do? And if not, then I just need to change my state, which is, I think, what you're talking about, Carol. It's about how do you change your state from being in a reactive mood or in a depressive mood when you don't need to be. You know, I'm never one, as a therapist, to say depression is not a good thing, because sometimes going down and going into all of that is necessary and it's healing. But there are times when we get triggered and we get thrown there that we need to move out. And so what I'm a big believer in distraction. I love to read mystery novels. I love to work in the garden. I love to do puzzles, jigsaw puzzles, crossword puzzles. I enjoy walking. I don't sing, and everybody around me will tell you I don't sing. So music is not, but I like to listen to music. I just don't participate. I love movies. So I'm very careful if I need to alter my state, what movies I watch. The same thing with music, because sometimes with new music, it feels like it's assaulting me. You know, I mean, it's not pleasant. It doesn't take me to a nice place. So
I hear you. So I understand which way you're doing.
Yeah, it's, you know, we've talked in the past about, you know, altering our state, and there are obviously all kinds of ways to do that that are not really that helpful, right? Probably most of us have tried a few of those. But I think it's really important to have a list of 10 things that really give you pleasure or will alter your state. So that at those times, because sometimes, you know, when you're in that state, it's really hard to figure out, I don't know what to do. And have that list and just try them. You know, I keep a pile of jigsaw puzzles because for some reason I can get really lost in that. And I guess it's hard for me to do two things at one time. So that works really well. That really works. Being outdoors really works wonders. You know, sometimes calling a friend and chatting.
Absolutely. You know? That's something I need to do more of, because – you know, I'm on the phone so much, and I'm not complaining, because I think this is what God wants me to do. So, but Pamela had asked me earlier, we're going to go to her in a second, if I get enough sunlight. And, I don't, because a lot of times, you know, I'm in the house and I'm working. You know, I'm always looking up things to speak about. Like flashbacks, a lot of talk about flashbacks right now from the people that are calling me. And, you know, and one girl today, I had two that had called in the afternoon. I thought I was going to take a nap. No. But anyway, that's all right. The point is they're getting so terribly triggered and they don't know what to do with themselves. But let's go. I like your suggestions, though. Yes, I do. The only thing other than singing that I like, and I can't run anymore like I used to. I could run. If somebody was chasing me, honey, I would find a way to run. Yes, I would. I don't know if I'd end up in the hospital after that, but I would be able to do that at that time. The adrenaline rush would get to me. But, you know, it's I used to love to read, but my eyes aren't as good as they used to be, you know, but and that's kind of maddening. That's the way that the cheapies I put them on. But the other thing that I do is look up a lot of information. I am a nut about looking up information. And I can do that for hours. I can. I'll get a thought
That's
in my
good.
Head, and all of a sudden, then all of a sudden I got the FBI after me. They want me to sign this and sign that. I go, oops, they might think I'm the bad guy, and I get out of there, you know. But, you know, I do a lot of that. That I do also. Let me get on Pamela on. Go ahead, Pam.
Hey, y'all. Good to hear your voice, Dr. Sharon, and, of course, Carol. And, I love distractions, too. And, you know, our day, my husband's retired now, so our day starts out with a cup of coffee and talking to the Lord, and we just invite him into our day. And once we've done that, we just kind of just, you know, go with the flow, you know, because I'm now the director of communications for NASCA, you know, I schedule people in, and we're scheduled out till June now, heading into July for people that want to come on and tell their stories. And people need to have their voices heard. And Yeah. I'm seeing now some connections between some of these people that are have caught, like one of the gentlemen today that I've booked on the show got a, called one of our ambassadors in Illinois, and so I'm trying to see which ambassadors are doing what, because I'll have to report to the board in May. But some of the distractions I like as well is making my husband watch these old outer space movies. The black and white, outer space movies with all their dials. And it was so fun. Yeah, and we like Richard Beaver. We like the Andy Griffith Show. I don't know if y'all like that with Barney.
Barney, my God. my son turned him on too. Go ahead.
That's right. And I also like, of course, I have two children and four grandchildren, and so you know I get calls with them, and then I have some personal friends that I found, NASCA friends that I call, and we'll laugh and carry on, like Carol and I, and then Thomasine from Maryland that I met, and me and my husband, sometimes we pack up and go 30 miles to the lake. We have a beautiful lake about 30 miles away, and we'll just sit there, and we'll go during the week now, so not so many people are out there, you know. But it's just stuff that I do now that I didn't have to, that I used to waste time and energy spending on thinking about my past and my childhood abuse. I don't have to go there anymore because of my recovery, you know, at NASCA. NASCA's played a big part in my recovery. And, of course, I just spoke with my therapist today. I talk with her once a month, and I look forward to that because she shows me whenever we talk how much I've come along, you know, in my healing process. And so, you know, I don't have many flashbacks anymore. And I just want to give people hope that there is, once you get along on your healing path to us, you can't, there is hope that you won't have those flashbacks anymore. So just, you know, hang on, journey through it, call NASCA, call the contact list at NASCA, and we are here to help you.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. You know, you just reminded me, if you want to howl, okay, if you want to laugh, it's more of an adult type thing, but it's so funny. I don't know if you ever heard of this TV show. I'm going to say this, and then we'll get on to something more heavy here. But King of Queens. Have you ever heard of that, King of Queens?
Yes, I didn't even know that existed.
Yeah, that couple and the father. It is so funny. I watched it for a couple of hours. I did last night. And I thought I was going to piddle my pants at one point because one was just so funny. And so I think during these times, just to sort of like wrap it up a little bit too, during these times, we have to find joy in life somewhere. And I think if we can find, you know, like a program that, like, I know some people are watching The Little Rascals. They're able to do that. They have their, you know, they have that in their things like that. They're going back to watching things like that, and just to feel joyful again, because quite frankly, so many people, all of the stats have gone up, okay? Now, to be on a little more serious note, I've spoken to someone just a few days ago, it was, well, it was last week actually, who told me that the stats are going up horribly.
Yes.
And this is for all of the abuses and also domestic violence. You know, when we're living in a world, that is so filled with so much uncertainty and filled with so much strife. And, you know, we have people saying things are going to get better and then they don't. Okay. And people are not stupid. American people are not stupid. And we can see for ourselves which way things are going. And then, you know, you start to worry about what tomorrow is going to bring. And the only thing I can say to people who are listening right now, because I've had too many people speak to me about this, two things. Number one, you know, as far as the flashbacks that they're having, because I was going to talk about that last week. That's when I started with the flashbacks of people going backwards into that, that I'm aware of anyway. You know, we cannot change the past. We can't. But we can change ourselves. And a person said to me, well, what does that mean? It wasn't my fault. None of this was my fault. I didn't ask to have this happen to me and all that stuff. No, we didn't. But we have to learn over the years if we're going to survive. And sometimes it does take some years. It takes some time. You know, we have to learn that all of us are flawed. Even we who are the victims, we, the survivors. So work on ourselves. And as far as the people who abused us, okay, you can do two things. You can pray for them, or you can just look at them as toxic people and still pray for them, though, and move on. Because whether it's a family cycle that's causing the abuse of what you came from, in my case, it was not, okay? There wasn't a cycle of abuse on my mother's side at all. On my so-called father's side, yes, there was, but I'm not related to him. I found that DNA is a wonderful thing, isn't it? So, you know, I don't even think about him. Of course, my parents are gone. They're dead and all this other stuff. I still call him a father because I just found this out about 3 years ago that he wasn't my bio father. So the thing of it is this. We have to live for ourselves. We are good people. We can make ourselves good. If we have flaws, and of course we have flaws, work on the things that we know that we can work on, okay? And let the past be the past. Yes, you're going to look backwards every once in a while. I look backwards every once in a while, but I look at it in a different light now because that was a long time ago. Did it happen? Yes. Is it going to go away? It will if I let it not go away, but put it in a different part of your life. Because otherwise, you'll never grow, number one. Number two, you'll never get out of that rut that you're in because you're rolling around in doom and gloom and sadness. And it's a very, very difficult spot to be in. So you have to start a new person. Find out, get more in touch with yourself. What makes me happy? We already know what makes you sad, so don't even go there. But what makes you happy? Now, we just spoke about movies. We spoke about books. We spoke about puzzles. We spoke about, well, I used to run, but, you know, I can't run. Well, I can't if I have to, but running, something athletic. Whatever it is that makes you happy, taking a walk by a lake. I love lakes. I was born in Pearl River, New York, and there was a nice lake up there. And then we moved to Staten Island a little after that, not long after, and that was horrific. But the point is don't look backwards. Instead, try to learn to look forwards. And you have to make your forward happy. And I think we can do that if we try. I can do that. I've done it.
Yeah. You know, I think one of the things that trips people up a lot is when we say to be happy, I think when people are stuck, that feels like such an impossibility. And I think what we're talking about here are the pathways to be happy. In other words, when you are watching a funny show that tickles, you know, your funny bone, like the ones that you mentioned, or you are doing, you know, creativity is something else too, you know, you know, paintings, finger painting, right? Making a pot, knitting, crocheting, cooking, you know, something that, it, you know, where you're creative. All of those, what they do is they alter our state from being either stuck or in a place that is uncomfortable to something that is pleasurable, right? And that's the pleasure that says, oh, I was really happy. Well, what does that mean? Well, I was doing something that was pleasurable. I was enjoying something, or I was losing myself for a few moments. And because of that, I got out of where I was, or out of the doldrums, or out of the fear or the anxiety or the depression or the flashbacks. And, I'd like to say something about flashbacks, if I may. I also want to say something to Pamela about her black and white science fiction movies. The first time I ever got terrified in a movie, this is really going to show you how old I am, was when I watched The Thing. And it was a really early science fiction movie. It scared me to death. Anyway, I never rewatched it since I watched it. I was too little to have gone to that movie theater, and I went alone, so I was much too little, but that's a whole other story. I want to say something about flashbacks, if I may.
Flashbacks
are saying, you know, there's something that is trying to come through, right? I mean, we can get jerked back into a memory that is uncomfortable and painful, and you know, whatever emotions you have attached to it, and we get jerked back, and then it's important to, you know, work with it and to move out. But we also have to realize that flashbacks are, they're breakthroughs that are saying, I now am stronger. I now have the ego strength to deal with whatever that material that is being presented to us. Because as we all know, most of us started our journey in an unpleasant way. In other words, we didn't say, gee, it's a beautiful spring day, I think I'll work on my past abuse, right? Something usually occurred to pull us back into that, right? Or we broke through, you know, our denial, our protection against us. And we only do that when we really have the strength to begin facing it. Now, that doesn't mean we jump in with both feet. To me, it always means we do what we can and we get help and we have guidance to walk with us as we go through that. The flashbacks are also, because flashbacks have a really bad name because they're painful, but it's also saying you are now strong enough to deal with this material, you know, in a safe way, in a protected way, and I believe in a guided way, because I think it's easier that way, and it gets us through the path a little bit quicker. And obviously I'm biased, but that certainly is what helped me and probably led me to wanting to be with others as they go through their journey as well. So I just wanted to say that about flashbacks. And it's hard. I don't know if this TikTok stuff has triggered people into having flashbacks. I mean, Carol, you would know because you've been talking to people. I've been, you know, I haven't as much, but I think that's a time when people hear something that brings about a similar feeling of fear or danger or being powerless, right? Being vulnerable.
Right.
Yeah, that opens that door, you know? And
absolutely.
And certainly, you know. Yeah, yeah. So I just wanted to say that about flashbacks because that's the other side.
I'm going to go down the list here. Is this Pamela or who am I speaking to now?
Yeah, this is Pamela.
Go ahead.
You're absolutely right, Dr. Higgins. And what I find is that the flashbacks are healthy, like you said. They're just part of healing. But what happens is feel strong enough to handle them, so they try to escape and self-medicate or use some other way to deny them. And I think if they're having big enough flashbacks and they're happening so much to cause them so much anxiety, and it's causing them dysfunction in their activities of daily living, that points to needing a professional in their life, a trauma specialist in their life.
Yes. Well, let me tell you something. I have here a list of 13 things about flashbacks, which maybe we can get into. But it's written by, he's a doctor too. He's Peter Walker. And this is what I'm telling you. I look up all these things, and flashbacks are something that's been said to me. But so we can go over that. But I also want to address that Darlene is here, Sharonda from North Carolina, she's here, and Victoria, she also is here. So we have three more people. Now we have, thankfully, a nice large panel. And I can thank Pamela and also her husband because they go in there and they get people on, and I thank you so much for that. I love to have a full panel if we can, and we've got it now, because then we can all bring in the conversation of what's bothering them. And we have, of course, we have Sharon here, Higdon Jones, and she is a licensed psychotherapist, and she's been doing that for over 35 years. So you can ask her questions. And then we can go back and forth to what I have listed here from Dr. Peter Walker. And and he speaks primarily on the flashbacks and how you can address them. But I agree with what you just said, Pamela, too. When a person is starting to have a flashback, it's always good. It's ideal, actually, if they have a therapist who understands childhood abuse and understands flashbacks. Because a lot of times the things that are all of a sudden starting to be released from our brain is information that was stuck in our brain because our brain couldn't handle, you know, we would split, okay? That's what the split personalities, as they used to call it, right, the split personalities, dissociation will come into play. So when you have a therapist, you know, that understands all of this, and it's a good thing to contact your therapist when you've had a really major flashback. Okay, let me go to Darlene down here and see what she has to say. Go ahead. Darlene, are you there?
Yeah, I had
the mic's open.
I had to unmute it.
Okay,
go ahead.
I'll go to the territory next, and go ahead.
As some of those, I had a difficult time today because I had been writing in my second book, and I had a friend that was looking over some of the things, and then it made me feel so bad when she said, well, you are making a lot of people wonder about the pregnancy, you know, and I said, but I didn't even know really I was pregnant. All this other stuff that was blocked about having the baby and all that stuff. And then when the flashback came, oh, man. It's a good thing I guess I was in a doctor's office when it happened.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yeah. And I was blaming myself, you know, because I was seeing her stabbing the baby and stuff. And it was just too hard to really... At times, I mourn, you know, just a little bit. And like Victoria told me, I needed to, you know, mourn for the loss of them, which I don't think I ever really did, you know. Mm-hmm. And but it's starting to hit me a little hard, you know what I'm saying?
Hmm. Well, what do you think about that, Sharon?
Are you talking
it's
about
hitting her more?
As you're... are you talking about it as you're writing, and so memories are coming up, and you're kind of going over things that happened in your life? It's opening up aspects of it or parts of it that you have not really felt before, like the mourning?
No, my friend had told me when she had was going to stop by and give me the paperwork on fixing the grammatical errors and stuff like that to help me out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she said one thing that everybody's going to wonder is you don't talk that much about the pregnancy and the baby. And I'm like, how could I? You know, how, you know. And, you know, it really disturbed me a lot. And so I added a little brief thing about what I did remember about the pregnancy, and then at the end of the book, you know, added inside is what I basically called it, you know, but it's like I beat myself up because I can't remember, you know, and she's like, you need to remember, and I'm like, I can't remember all of it. I just got bits and pieces, and it's very frustrating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's where you are right now, right?
I started suicidal ideations back then, you know. And I don't want it to arise to that ever again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Darlene, if you have any of that, the suicidal ideations, I used to suffer from that for years. Darlene, you call me. I don't care. You know I'm up all night, so you can call me anytime that you need. Okay, please. All right.
Okay, thank you. That just goes to show, you know, when there's somebody probably listening that knows what I'm talking about when flashbacks on how bad sometimes it can hurt you. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, absolutely. I mean, part of the flashback is a... Go ahead.
It's okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, the flashback takes you right back with, it's not just imagining or remembering an event. It's the pain of whatever is associated with that, right? And it feels like a wave at the beginning. So, you know, it's like all of us have to learn how to ride that wave and to have whatever it is. But if you get into, and I'm so glad you said that, Carol, and certainly your invitation to Darlene about call if you do go into the suicidal ideation, because one of the tragedies about having been abused is in the self-abuse, right, that we have against ourselves because we don't remember or because, you know, And we just take it up and start to abuse ourselves. And, Darlene, the fact that you are still, you know, digging around with all of that material and that you are putting it down into words and moving it from inside yourself to outside on that page, you know, with the intent not only for your own healing but to help other people is a phenomenal. But, you know, you're not going to do that without some activation going through, which is why it speaks to other people, right? Because that's why other people can relate to your experience, because it's so whole. But it's very hard when you get next to your experience to write those words down. It's going to jiggle stuff loose. You're very brave to do that.
Thank you. And I love what my friend Victoria told me earlier, you know, where she said, well, you know, people that's got dissociation and got these blocked memories, they'll understand you're not remembering all the details.
Yeah.
And that made me feel a lot better. Thank you, Victoria.
Yeah. She's here right now. I should have started. She was first. Let me get her on, and then after that I'll go down to Sharonda because I have a list of people here now to go through. Okay, Victoria, your mic is open.
I got her book open now too. You know, I got Charity the Healing Steps Recovery book. I just let you know I do have it now.
Ah, good. Thank you very much, Charlene.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I hope you find it helpful.
Yes.
I probably
sure
will.
Thank you. Victoria, you two are talking, so go ahead. And then I'm going to get down to Sharonda. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're on the show.
Wanna
I'm glad
say,
you called in. Go ahead.
Thank you. I just want to say I had severe flashbacks, and they would like they said, like it's been said, you know, you're right there, you know, you're right back there. And I think the hardest part for me is like when I was back there and don't come out of it, I had a lot of shame too that, or felt guilt, which I learned the difference between guilt and shame. You know, guilt is like when you go steal something from the store and you feel guilty. And shame is, you know, you did something wrong if you feel guilty, and shame is you are wrong, you know, something about you is wrong. And I found that the guilt from somebody else that did something to you, they put that on you and it becomes shame. And so for me, I had to put that back on the abuser, you know, so that I didn't take that crap on anymore. And I had to go through years of a revolving door of psychiatric units and a commitment even. And I just want to tell people that if you're going to the point where you don't think you can handle it, there is nothing wrong with reaching out for help, you know, whether it be calling somebody, whether it be going into the hospital, whether it be whatever. And what I used to do is self-medicate, somebody else mentioned, and I'd say, well, no wonder why I drink or do drugs, you know, and then I would try to quit again, and these memories would start coming back. And again, I would say, no wonder why I drink and use, you know. But until I met a woman who knew what my story was, and that I could pretty much tell anything to her, and she had been through similar situations. So just that understanding from other survivors, you know, because when I went in the mental hospital a lot of times and went in for treatment and stuff, at first they had me diagnosed with borderline personality disorder. So if I'd be crawling around the floor and go under a table and be whimpering and shaking, they would write down that I was doing it to get attention. Well, when they finally correctly diagnosed me with MPD, which is now known as DID, it was looked at a certain different way. It was looked at as, and she's in a dissociative state. And I was treated so much better and cared for and, like I said, treated, actually. But when I, you know, started, it didn't matter. I mean, you know, like this one lady said, somebody can say the word lobster and it triggers her. You know, so we just don't know what's going to, like, trigger each other or whatever. But I found for me that, like Darlene was saying, to write things down, you know, and like what said that when I write it down, it gets out of me, you know. Mm-hmm. And there are journals that I won't even look at because they're so dark. You know, I was in a really bad place. But I made it through it because I had that journal, and I was taught how to do that by a psychologist that I was going to that specialized in treating with people with MPD. And she said, get a journal and just write everything out, you know. And I tell you what, when I'd write all that stuff out afterwards, I just feel like exhausted, you know, because, I mean, physical labor is a lot easier for me to do than working on this mental stuff. And I've been working on this stuff since I was 21. I'm 58 now. And things are still coming back, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, it's going to be a lifelong journey, probably till the day I take my last breath, because this stuff that happened to us is so ingrained, you know. And my therapist said the same thing as they were saying, as far as the reason why you're having these flashbacks is because you're strong enough and you're ready. You're ready to deal with it, you know. And it doesn't mean you have to deal with it alone. It takes a lot of courage to reach out for help, and I had to learn that because I was brought up, you got to do it on your own. But I'm really glad that I was able to come on, and I'll quit talking now.
No, that's fine, Victoria, that's fine. Because when people are having terrible flashbacks and you need someone, I don't really have that. I think I've only had one flashback in my life.
Yeah.
And whereas with, and I recognize it for what it was, but there are people who, you know, don't know how to get themselves away and out of that flashback, what to do for themselves. We speak about, you know, finding, like, taking your mind and putting it somewhere else. You're having a flashback, but there is also the truth, all right, that your mind is allowing you to remember something. And that's why NASCA always says if you are having a flashback and it's really a major one, you know, speak to your therapist if you have one, or call someone that's knowledgeable about, you know, flashbacks too.
I mean, I was, when I got away from my dad, I was having about 20, 30 a day. And I also could not even go into the restroom but once a day because of the flashbacks. You know, and you know, there was no amount of talking myself out of it. You know,
And people are like, ah, you know, just think of something else and just go in there and, you know, go to the bathroom. Well, when you're having flashbacks when you walk in that room, it's not as easy as just say some quick cliche to me.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's flooding, isn't it? It's flooding when you have them like that.
Yeah.
And you're right. You can't just say, well, I think I'll think of something else. I think I'll go watch, you know, King or Queens or whatever that show was.
Yeah.
So you're right.
Right.
That was funny.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Sometimes
Well, I didn't
flooding.
Do that, you know, in the sense of flashbacks. Flashbacks are something that's a category all of its own, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, but I'm saying when people get into the depression rut, where, you know, because it's all doom and gloom around us, you know what I'm saying? Because of the world that we live in, then I say, yes, it's time to find something that's funny, something that's going to make you laugh. And I was in that state of mind just a few nights ago. And I was just so, so depressed. And I thought to myself, am I ever going to be happy? I mean, I get happy through people. You know, I get happy through certain situations. But I didn't know peace in my life until, I hate to put it this way, but you guys know me, everyone that's on this panel. When my second husband passed away, I started to live. Okay, because it was too volatile. It was bad. All right. 37 years of it. And then actually I lived with him for a couple of years before that. So you might say 39 years. And I had myself in such a rut where I was under his thumb all the time. I was under his thumb. I couldn't move. I couldn't think. I mean, everything was his way or no way, you know what I'm saying? So I had to learn how to live, you know, what makes Carol happy and all this other stuff. So, you know, it's not an easy thing. Let's go down to Sharonda. I think there's somebody at my door, figures. Because Sharonda, what do you have to say about all of this?
Hello, everyone. Just so much. Wow. I'm pulling from the one that just stopped talking. You said that you started to live once your husband died.
Yeah, I did.
That is actually what happened to my mom when my father died.
Mm-hmm. Right.
She was 46 from a family of 14. And when he died, she felt so guilty for the relief of him being gone because he had like total control. He was a narcissist that she went to counseling because she was so relieved. Wow, you just brought that back to my memory. Good gracious. And to piggyback on what Victoria, she said so much that I could just pull from journaling. I have learned through NASCA in the last year of being with NASCA the importance of journaling and getting it out and being creative and finding happy places and different things. And so within the last year, I have really got into art to express myself, to help me with I guess my emotions and, you know, days when I'm feeling down or whatever. But I do find that picking up a journal and writing, and it helped me so much to literally, I just published my own journal and it just got approved Sunday and it's now on Amazon for purchase. So, I mean, and had it not been for NASCA, I've journaled some over the years, but just being in NASCA in this last year, I've really heard so much, and I really, really, like, stuck with it. And it is very relieving. Mm-hmm. It really helped me a lot. And I have not had a lot of flashbacks. I used to years ago and just stayed in a very dark place, very dealing with depression for a long time, but I don't have flashbacks like that now, like I used to. So for me, when I do find myself feel like I'm slipping into, where my mood is not happy-go-lucky, I find things to help me with it, and that's how I cope. I think I know it's only by the grace of God with my abuse and all that I've been through in my lifetime, and I'm 49 years old, that I found things that I guess like master pain, but drugs and alcohol was never one. Not down to anybody who was, you know, dealing with that, but that just was not my vice. It was not. That's not. That was not my go-to. For me, I always trying to find things to make myself happy, go and dance and go into the club and stuff like that. That's what I did. I mean, but it was during those times years ago that I was having flashbacks, that it affected me a lot with my mood and everything and how I interacted with people. But now I find myself where if I feel like a movie, if I see a movie and see the previews and stuff, if I feel like it's going to cause me to have a flashback or, you know, or trigger me, I won't watch it. Mm-hmm. So I'm very cautious. I have healthy boundaries, not when it just comes to people, but when it comes to what I receive into my spirit, what I watch and what I listen to. I'm very cautious about that, very. Mm-hmm. And that's just me. Thank you.
That's wonderful. That selectivity that you're talking about is such a wonderful way of taking care of ourselves, you know, being selective about what we expose ourselves, being selective about the people we invite into our lives,
who we spend time with.
So I salute you for that. That's so important. It's such an important part of healing, and it's such an important part of just living, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, you know, because we were so forced growing up to have to be in the presence and at the effect of people who are abusive and unkind and, you know, whatever our stories are. And now with healing, we can be selective about what we expose ourselves to and what we watch on television, what we listen to in the media, and who we spend our time with, you know?
Yes, ma'am.
And to know we don't have to be there. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
That is so true. So, Sharon, that's so true. Now my cell phone. Why don't these people leave me alone? Wait a minute now. See, that's that ring notification again. It's like there's somebody hanging outside my house. I don't like that. I had to turn something off the other night, and it was going to be a heavy-duty story about a child who was raped, you know, kidnapped and raped. And that's one of the things that happened to me in Staten Island. I was kidnapped and raped. But this child was held in a, like on a farm, you might say, in the back in a shed, a dilapidated shed. And I thought to myself, you know what? I do not want to watch this. Because, first of all, it's going to make me mad, okay? You know, and secondly, you know, I don't want to go there with those feelings, because we all know, each in our own way, we all know those feelings of fear when we were in certain positions that we had to go through. And so, you know, it's unfortunate because now Mark, he's a wonderful guy, and he is Pamela's husband. She, you know, I'm going to use it this way, but they understand me. She lucked out. She found herself a really good guy. And I would never, even at this point, 3 years after my husband's death, it's a little more than 3 years, like 3.5 years, whatever. Who's counting? But anyway, the point is I would never want to be married again, because I can't choose properly. You know, I tend to go still back to where I came from, domestic violence days at the age of 4 up to this day, you know, and you don't see it, because these narcissistic people, Sharonda, you had mentioned that, the narcissistic people, they have a way of being very charming, very sweet. You know, my first husband, he was a narcissist too. I didn't know that. And we didn't even talk about things back then. I was 19, okay? But he would open the doors for me, you know, the car doors. He did everything, but, well, let's just put it this way. He did everything for me. It was such a nice change from what I had come from. So I didn't know how to see that there's, you know, there's black and then there's white. I mean, there was no gray areas there. He behaved one way, and I came from another way, and one was totally opposite than the other. And sometimes that's not good either. okay? So I had to learn that the hard way. You know, it's nice to have manners, but if it's overly done, you know, everything is overly done, then you don't know what you're really in for, okay? Because people are people, and they should just act like people and just be normal. And normal, right? And act natural. And I didn't know these things. And after I married my first husband, he turned into a monster. But I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. So I had to learn through two marriages. I was with one for 12 years, the father of my children, and then my second husband. So I never knew peace, Sharonda, okay? I never knew peace. I knew what it was like to get hit. I knew what it was like to get called filthy, foul names, the worst of the worst. And I even make up a few, which makes people hysterical, but I would never do that on air. But anyway, you know, I did – one thing I do have is my humor. I always had a good sense of humor. And I have one memory that's so wonderful to me other than my children. Is I used to sing in New York City. I was in a band, and I didn't have to worry about where we were going to sing, any of us, because it was always prearranged. We were background singers, and sometimes one of us or two of us would be solo singers. And that was good time in my life. And then I got married. And that was the end of my singing days, by the way. I didn't sing from when I got up until the time I went to bed. No. I went and hid instead. So, Sharonda, your mother and I were probably in this same type of place is what I'm trying to get across here. Yes. And that's no place to be. I want to go to Mark. Yeah, it's not. Mark, where are you? There you are. What do you have to say about all this? Yes. What do you have to say about all of this?
About flashbacks? Well,
really about flashbacks, but also to, you know, just general, anything you want to talk about. Go ahead.
All right, well.
We do cover a lot of ground here. Go ahead.
As far as flashbacks, I don't know. Not everyone on here knows, but I haven't been abused, but I'm with Pamela for 38 years. I know her story. I know what she's gone through and where she's been and how she's come through and everything. We know this. But, you know, the one thing that triggers me the most out of all this is when her toxic family tried to get back in touch with her. And, you know, you don't hear from them for a year. And then they get back in touch with her and they turn everything on her, like, you know, she's not in a good place, and she does this, and she did that, and you did this when we were little, and da-da-da-da-da. And that just makes me so mad. Now, Pamela, I'm proud of her. She lets it roll off her back like water on a duck. But me, I'm mad. And it just, that's the one trigger of anything is when toxic people, and really, it's just them two in her family that just set me off. Now, I'm glad that she's with NASCA, because now every one of you on this panel, you understand all this stuff. You don't judge her. You don't look at her like, you know, she's not all right or good. But I'm sorry. It's been bugging me all day, and you gave me a chance to vent, so I did. But I just got to be proud of Pamela. She's come a long way, and she's in a really great place in her own healing, her own journey, and now, you know, working with NASCA, and I'm just proud of her. So give me some advice on how to deal with these triggers that come from her family that you don't hear from for over a year, and then all of a sudden, bam, there they are.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I keep toxic people away from me. And I don't even give them the chance.
See, they've been away. Yeah. They've been away for a long time, like over a year. Now all of a sudden they want to try and get back in and they say, oh, we need family. Well, talk about family. You guys are family.
Well, let me say something to you, Mark, okay? I haven't seen my brother since 2006. He was one of my abusers. And you see, he was very obviously very toxic, okay? So the last time that I spoke to him on the phone was when my stepfather was passing away. And all he could talk about was the will. And he was very nasty. He, in fact, he was, well, he was trying to scare me is what he was trying to do. And then he came out with some filthy things, and because he lives down Florida and he sees girls in bikinis, I want to hear this or I don't want to hear this. I said to him, tell you what, I'll take care of the will. I'm an executrix. I'll take care of it. I had to give him a certain amount of money. But on the other hand, do not call me again until you can be normal. I never heard from him again. Now, that was in 2008. And I don't know if he's dead or if he's alive, and I don't care. There was a time on this show that I could not even bring up my brother because that's incest. And we all know, well, how hard it is to even speak about incest today. We're getting a lot better because, damn it, it does happen. It's all over the place in many, many, many families, unfortunately. Another good reason for children not to tell, okay, to disgrace the family, the things that come along with that. So I did tell because I have a big mouth. But anyway, the point is this. It took me years to, even when I wrote my book, I skirted around it. You'd have to be a mental midget to not understand what I was talking about with my brother. But I didn't want to come out and actually say it, okay? I was still traumatized, you might say, by him and what he might do, because he would get these looks on his face that were maniacal. And it used to scare me, but it doesn't scare me anymore. I'm not scared anymore. And I have to live my life. We deserve to be happy. Mm-hmm. And what happened to us in the past, okay, with people who abused us in whatever form that might have been, okay? First of all, it's all right to grieve when you're having a flashback. It says it right here from this doctor. It says it's all right to grieve. And you grieve what it is that you're grieving, whatever it might be. But you don't, you know, you do not. It says allow yourself to grieve. Flashbacks are opportunities to release old, unexpressed feelings of fear, hurt, and abandonment. And to validate, okay, to validate and then soothe the child's, and they're speaking of the inner child, the child's past experience of helplessness and hopelessness. Healthy grieving can turn out tears or turn our tears into self-compassion and our anger into self-protection. So I like that. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, don't you, Sharon? I think that's good.
Beautiful.
So,
yes.
Yes, yes. And I'll give you the guy's name again. You can look him up. His name is Pete Walker, M.A.
Okay.
So, anyway, the point is we're all, you know, we never forget. We never forget what happened to us. And when you're writing a book, darling, if there's things that, you know, that are not clear in your mind, remember, you're the author. And the author has the right to put down whatever he or she wants in that book. You're the boss of your book. No one else is.
And
so
if I may add something
that.
To, oh, go, I'm sorry.
Yeah, please.
I just would like
go
to
ahead.
Add something to that. You're also, and this is kind of addressing what Mark was talking about. And Carol, you're absolutely right. You are the boss of your life. And Mark, you know, you know, Pamela is also the boss of her family and whatever she wants to do in terms of having a relationship or a non-relationship with them. You know, she gets to, at one time, obviously as children we could not control. We can't pack up our little bandanas on a stick and leave home and, you know, strike out and build a new life for ourselves. We are, you know, we are dependent. But at this time in life, and it is hard, it is tricky, but it's a little bit like Sharonda was talking about not watching a movie or reading material or allowing something into her consciousness that she doesn't want to have there. And we can do that with our life too. You know, and it sounds like Pamela has, you know, a wonderful man standing, you know, next to her going through this. And we all have to decide what kind of a relationship do we want to have with our family of origin if there was abuse in that family. And it's tough.
And Michelle, I understand what you're saying. And I'll tell you what, Pamela's handling it really well. She's got it under control. She knows how to handle it. It's just me. Mm-hmm. I get mad when they diss her. So, you know, it's just me. Pamela, I'm proud of her. She's got this under control. She's not worried about it. She's got them right where she wants them, and she don't want to get involved with them. So she knows what she's doing. I just get a little bit upset.
Well, it sounds like you get a lot of upset. I you know, Mark, you're a protector. You know, this is your wife. This is the woman you love, right? And you've got that protector coming up and saying, this pisses me off. I don't like it. I don't, you know, right? So I think for you, it's like, how do you manage that protector? I mean, you know, good for you. We all need that. Well, what do you, and I've heard that, by the way, from, you know, so many of these wonderful men and women who are partners of somebody who's been abused. It says, my God, I look at them and I see what they're doing or what they said, and I get so angry, and there's nothing I can do about it, right? It's just a strong feeling. So it's for you, I think it's, you know, how do you harness that inner protector that pisses you off?
Well, she'll calm me down.
You know?
Well, I understand how he feels, okay? I get that. Even in my marriages, as bad as they were, they would get really, really angry when my mother was so abusive to me verbally and neglectful and all the things that I went through with her. But and they would get angry. Where I use this terminology at times. I became numb after a while to all different kinds of abuses. And I'm also tough. You know, with my nightmares, if I have a nightmare, and I haven't had one quite a while, but I roll over and I say a nasty word, and we won't say what it is, and it goes away. I go back to sleep because I realize, you know, that was a nightmare, and I put that nightmare where it belongs. That's in the past. It's not going to hurt me now. It's not going to touch me now. It's gone. And the nightmare was always the same thing. And so I got mad at it. I got mad at my nightmare. and it actually worked. And I haven't had a nightmare in a long time. It says here, learn to identify the types of triggers that lead to flashbacks. Avoid unsafe people. That's why I always say stay away from toxic people forever if you have to. Like, I haven't seen my brother since 2008. How lovely is that? Okay. Avoid unsafe people, places, activities, and triggering mental processes. Practice preventative maintenance with these steps when triggering situations are, unavoidable. I got that out. So I agree with that because as long as you're around toxic people, and I don't care if they've gone 1 year, 5 years, or 8 years, or 20 years. I don't care. Stay away from me. Because, you see, that takes a person back to the situation that happened. And if I ever had any fuzzy feelings, I was thinking one day not too long ago, what are the nice things that my brother ever did for me? I came up with three things. That was it. Okay? And that's not enough. Because I can then look at the other side, the flip side of the coin, and say, well, what are all the nasty things that he did to me? Whoa, honey, all right? I could come up with 100. So when you look at it that way, that person has no place in my life, ever.
That's right.
And that's how I feel. And maybe that's how Pamela feels, too.
Yeah. Carol, it's Pamela. One of the things that's helped me, Dr. Sharon and Carol and everybody on the panel, is that there are some really good YouTube videos about narcissism, okay? My sister has the narcissistic personality disorder because of the way we were all abused. I was sexually abused from the age of 4 to 18, and us three girls were all verbally, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually abused, okay, for those 14 years. And so, and we didn't have a mother that loved us, never told us she loved us, never was around, and left us with this monster who she knew was a pedophile when she married him. So, you know, I know my sister has narcissistic personality disorder because of the abuse. And I can't be mad at her for having a disorder, okay? And she never went to get professional help. She treated, she is an alcoholic, and that is her, that is what she wants to be for the rest of her life. She doesn't want to move on and get help. Doesn't, you know, feel that she needs it, which narcissistic people don't think they need anything. But what she tries to do with me, bringing me back into life after a year, is that she wants me as supply. Somehow, some way, some of her supply isn't working for her, so she's trying to reach out to me for supply. And I refuse to be her narcissistic supply. So that's where I stand on it all.
That's good. That's good. I actually said to my mother one time, just before she became ill, but when the children would walk into the house, oh, hi, how are you? And she said to both of them, how are you doing? Blah, 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 blah. And they were allowed to give her a kiss on the cheek. Well, I never kissed my mother, and she never told me that she loved me. I can understand what you're saying there, Pamela. And she abandoned me, all different kinds of things. So one time I got mad. When I get mad, I don't just stand there. I do action, okay, one way or another. And I said to my mother, hey, I was in that pedophile house for a year and a half, and I was touched, and I put down a certain amount of time because I knew what it was. I was making a picture, and every time he touched me, I would draw a line. And they thought that I was making a border around the picture, okay? It was a big picture. And I held on to that paper after I got out of there. I held on to it for years. And then I finally threw it out because that's not a part of my life anymore. That's the way I look at it. It's gone. Throw it away. But I said to her, well, to me it wasn't. This is how I handle it. Shh. Okay. So this is, everybody has to handle things their own way. So anyway, I said to her, I said, how long does it take to get a divorce anyway? Because she was divorcing my so-called father. And she wouldn't answer me. Of course, I know now it's like about a year and a half, and the year and a half was up. All right. I was there a little over a year and a half. And I was still in that pedophile house. Now, the only reason why I got out of there was because I finally told, after being told I was going to be killed, after he almost broke my wrist because I was resisting and all this other stuff. And so by the time I was 7 and a half, a little bit more, I finally told an aunt who was very drunk, and I didn't know if she'd remember or not, but she remembered. And she told my mother, and my mother got me out of there, okay? Now, when you're dealing with issues like that, you're dealing with past issues like that. No, they don't go away, but I've put it in a different part of my brain. That's what I've done. I read an article once where it actually told you to do that. All these many, many, many things that happened to us, unfortunately, some have more than others, doesn't matter. One time is too many. The point is this, you put it in a different part of your brain. You deal with it. It happened. And there is life after abuse. There is. And there are things that can trigger us, yes. So if it be toxic people or if it be a movie, and I had that happen to me too, or if it be a book, whatever it might be, stay away from it. That's all. Mm-hmm. Stay away from it. That's how I handle it. You know, that's how I handle it. And and we all have to learn how to handle our own emotions. We can have, you know, we can be a listening ear. We can give each other guidance as we know it, because we've gone through it. And I have my own way of handling things. And if I hadn't done that, you know, now I've taken down that brick wall that I put up against people, because at one time I was a loner, a terrible loner. Didn't want to be near people, didn't like people. I was almost like a sociopath, except I didn't go around murdering people, okay? I didn't do that. Psychopaths do that. Sociopaths do it. That is usually in the family, okay? That's like with bikers and stuff like that, and they have to take care of other rival gangs, but they have no conscience. And, of course, a psychopath has nothing, can't love, can't do anything. And yet you wouldn't know it, because they, too, can be very charming. Now, with me, I decided that I'm just going to take down all the brick walls that are keeping me from growing, and realize that, like with flashbacks, as it's written here that I just read a couple minutes ago, And what we've been speaking about on the show, it is a release from the brain. It's giving you a little more information. And it is a good thing. I think Pamela had said it was a good thing. Well, someone has said that. It was a good thing to, maybe Sharon said, I don't know. It's a good thing to, when these flash, it's giving you a little more information. And it may not be very good information, but it's still giving you information. And if it's something that's going to bother you, then yes, it's good to have a therapist that you can contact. It's important. It's a part of your healing process, because if you have a good therapist, that therapist, you know, can work right through you, you know, work with you to get through that new enlightenment, shall we say. Or I have one person that calls me, another person, and she says she's trying to put the puzzle of her life together. And there's still a few missing pieces. And I always say to her, does it matter? Does it really matter? And she has to make that decision. But to what we've been speaking about on this show tonight are ways to deal with the flashbacks. And toxicity is a terrible thing. That's where we came from. And people, you know, who are toxic to us, they don't need to be in our life. They're not going to enrich it. It's just going to bring us backwards. Yeah. And poor Mark there, he wants to put his boxing gloves on. I get it. you know. And Pamela, you're very lucky. You have such a wonderful marriage, and I'm so happy that you have such a wonderful marriage and you were able to find such a wonderful guy. Because most people that come on this show, most people that come on this show don't have that luck. You know what I'm saying? Now, Sharon, I know you're happy, whatever, but there's so many that aren't. Because, yes, that comes from the past. I still go back to the violence. There's just something about these people that draw me in. Not that I want to see violence, don't get me wrong. I don't mean it that way. But they have a certain type of personality, which is what I was used to growing up. And that's why, Sharonda, maybe with your mother, the same thing. You know, you tend to draw people that are not going to be healthy for you. And then you get stuck in it. You get stuck. And you say, what do I do? Well, I made packages for me. I had takeoff kits. I had them hidden outside under, the old-fashioned, on the outside of the house. Anyway, it was made out of metal. Now it's made out of wood. Siding. And it was, in those days, it was wide siding. This was on an old Victorian that my second husband and I owned. And there was one piece that was loose on it. And I made sure I had an extra driver's license. I kept adding money to an envelope. I made sure I had all the information I needed for my children, all information about myself, anything that I might need, okay? And certainly car keys. I had car keys made. Because if he became too volatile, I'd take off. And I knew right where to go. He didn't know I had a hiding spot. And I'd take off for days. Okay? So, you know, this isn't a way of to live. It's not a way to live. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunately a way that we who have been so abused from domestic violence all the way up to sexual abuse to physical abuse to mental abuse, all the things that we've gone through. Unfortunately, we live that life, and we keep living that life, and we keep living that life until we break the cycle, and we've set up boundaries. And today, I'm much smarter than I was, say, 20 years ago, about what to look for. The red flag.
Yeah.
So, you know, this has been a very interesting show, and I'm so thankful that we had such a large panel here and everyone had a chance to speak. And I don't know, we only have about 3 minutes left. So I'm going to turn this over to you, Sharon. What would you suggest about people, give them hope about whatever you want to say about the flashbacks?
Well, it's interesting when you were talking about flashbacks and flashbacks and nightmares are both indicators, aren't they? That's what we've all said. They're a way of something is breaking free, which is also a sign that we are strong enough and we are in a better place and we will know how to handle that. And it reminded me of this little, and I just went and looked it up, it's out of a book called A Common Prayer, and I would like to share it. It's just a couple of lines that really speaks to that. And it said, let us pray for wisdom. Let us pause from thinking and empty our mind. Let us stop the noise. In the silence, let us listen to our heart, the heart which is buried alive. Let us be still and wait and listen carefully. A sound from the deep, from below, a faint cry, a weak tapping, distant muffled from within. The cry for help. And that's what flashbacks and that's what nightmares are, to cry for help. And thank God there's a place where we can all go and we can receive that help and we can reach out to each other and say, I've heard your cry and congratulations, you're now in a place to reach out and break the silence. And you're now in a place, as we've all talked about tonight, where healthy boundaries becomes part of our life and we can go to be healthier and happier individuals in this tough time that we're going through. So thank you so much for inviting me, for being here. But I wanted to share that with you. It's always spoken to me about what flashbacks and nightmares are. It's a cry for help. And it said we're strong because we can listen to that, you know?
That was very good, Sharon. Thank you. I like that. Yeah.
Good.
That was great. Yeah. Well, we had a wonderful show tonight. We really did. And I'm going to put that on Facebook. I like to do that. And because people should listen to NASCA more often, because I don't mean that take away from the Zoom. I call it Zoom. The recovery groups, I don't mean that. We have, you know, we offer recovery groups also, and I'm sure they're very important. But one thing we do have on NASCA on nights like this is we all stick together, we all try to figure things out, and we do a darn good job. Yes, we do. So I want to thank all of you for coming on. Thank you so much. And, you know, we have about 60 seconds left. So I'm just going to say that, you know, there is hope. And we are moving forward. And by the way, when I wrote my book, there was only 2 memoirs on Amazon. 2. I was one of them. So and look at all the books that have exploded. So we are making a difference. People are reading them. And we have authors right here. Of course, Sharon has her book. And Darlene's an author. I'm an author. I don't know if anyone else here, Sharonda, I don't know if I don't think you blog, but and Victoria, you blog and you go on shows and stuff. We do what we do, okay? And we're doing a darn good job at that, too. Yes, yes. So thank you so much. Good night. God bless. Mm-hmm. And keep your head held high, okay? Because someday things will get better. Yes. Mm-hmm. And thank you, Sharon, so much for coming on. Mm-hmm. Yes.
You're welcome.
And be well. Mm-hmm. Good night now.
Good night.
Love you.
Good night, baby. Good night.
All that you've done.
Blog Talk Radio.